Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you here. Glad also to have back on the program once again, Sandy Mason. She's an extension educator with U of I Extension, working in the horticulture vein. She's responsible for, now, have they added all these counties now?
Yes.
Is it? But, okay. Champaign, Ford, Iroquois, Vermilion. So she's just driving around constantly.
Yes.
She's here with us once a month, always on a Tuesday, to answer questions about things that grow in the home landscape. So if you have questions about trees and shrubs, flowers, vegetables, houseplants, any and all of that is perfectly fine. And as I say in the promo when I talk about the show, maybe there is some problem that you have from last year you're still not quite sure what to do with, or you're thinking about the things that you would like to be planting this year and you're looking for some suggestions, any and all of that is certainly great. Number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And you can also send an email. I'd like to put in your question that way. It's will-talk@illinois.edu. At any point here, questions are welcome. It's good to have you here once again.
Yeah, it's great. Although, don't take this personal, but I'd rather be outside
gardening today. Believe me, no, I understand. And in fact, and it's so strange here. Okay, so it's mid March, and the Weather Service is forecasting for tomorrow a near record high temperature of 78.
Yeah. But near record? I'm thinking that should be the record.
That should be the record?
I don't know.
Okay.
So, but it just
I don't know
goes
what
to
the
show
record
you.
Is.
That it has gotten warm in the past,
yes.
You know, at other times, yes. Too. But I certainly don't remember a long stretch like this where we've had just warm days one right after the other. You know, we certainly have had those moments where it's been warm. But yeah.
Well, and one of the things that I want to ask you, I had a question from somebody who was interested in at least having you talk about the fact that it has gotten really warm a little bit early. And, for example, he had cones on his roses, and he was saying, should I take them off?
Yes.
Yes. And I think, the answer is it, because you don't want to cook them.
Yeah.
But then don't, keep them nearby because we could still have a frost.
Oh, absolutely. Because we're not even at the average date of frost.
Yeah, that's well into next month.
Right. Yeah. Right. So we're not even at the average state. So there's plenty of opportunities for it to get cold again. So that's always my fear. You know, I'm trying to enjoy, the moment, enjoying the nice warm weather. But I can't help but think a little bit about, you know, we certainly have the chance of having cold weather after this. And then what happens to the plants after that? So I think I know people are a lot of maybe uncovering things because things are growing up. But just to realize, have those leaves or whatever that you sort of uncovered them with, have them nearby. I wouldn't be sticking them in the compost pile just yet so that you can easily sort of throw something over them if you need to.
Yeah, okay. So, and definitely you want to be tuned to what's going on. Is there any, supposing that it does continue to be warm and things just go ripping right along and then suddenly we get a burst of cold, there's probably not very much one can do other than things that really are tender and you're concerned about, put the cones back on, put the pile of leaves back on, do whatever you can to give them some shelter.
Or, you know, obviously, I mean, you could do something like sheets. And, you know, there's a lot of folks like me that have this collection of sheets. And even if you want to go something a little fancy, they have what are called floating row covers, which is just this white kind of spun bond stuff, which I think is always good to have on hand. And that will help for a few degrees. And often that's enough. If it'll help, 3 to 5 degrees, usually that's enough to protect things. But if we were to get really into cold, as in into the low 20s, which certainly can still happen, then even those things aren't going to help a whole lot. So part of this is just enjoying the good weather and then keeping our fingers crossed. That's my scientific way to do it.
Okay. Here's a caller to talk with. Let's do that. Someone who is listening in Urbana, line number one.
Hi.
Hi.
I like to eat pumpkin seeds. And yesterday I had bought some my new seeds for the year, and I had some zucchini seeds that were left over from the prior year, and I ate about 10 or 12 of them. Now, within an hour or two, I broke down into a chills and a very violent shaking, a body shaking everywhere. I couldn't even hold a glass of water. Went to bed and finally settled down, and I had what would be classified as the two-way flu. I had been at a grocery store, like 4 hours before, and I just wonder whether the seeds are coated with something that might have caused this kind of reaction, or whether it was just a normal flu.
Well, that would be something to discuss with a physician, because obviously I'm not at that point. But your question, could they have been treated with something? Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Could have been treated with something. But it should have been on the pack, on the label.
Well,
I mean, it should have been labeled.
I buy them bulk.
Okay. But usually when they're treated, there's usually a color. Usually they're like pink or something that tells you that there's something, a coating on them.
Yeah, like corn is pinkish orange.
Right. And that, for that very reason, so people know this is treated seed. And so typically that's done. I wouldn't think that zucchini seed would have been, but there's not to say that it wasn't. So
okay, yeah. Well, that's the angle that I was,
yeah,
you know, I know
could very well have been.
The symptoms were like a flu, but not the violent shaking that I was experiencing.
Yeah, that would definitely be something to talk to your physician about, but yeah, probably not a good thing to do again, but you know that already. So.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
All right, other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, here's another one. I'm not sure how well you will handle this one, but here's an email. It doesn't have to do
it's
with human health.
No. Oh.
Someone's writing in and says that they enjoy photographing trees and their structure, particularly before they get hidden when they leaf out. So where are some of the biggest trees of the various species in the area? And he's talking about big diameter trees in Champaign County.
If you're just sort of looking at public parks and stuff, I think Crystal Lake Park has some great oak trees and stuff. They have some really large trees. Mm-hmm. I would check with like the park, if you're looking for something local, I'd certainly check with some of the park districts because Crystal Lake just comes to mind right away. Because they have just some magnificent trees. And I think that's actually part of the old growth of trees that would have been around here naturally. So I would check there. I'm trying to think of any place where you're going to see lots of different ones. I would just check with the park districts, probably. That would be one of the big ones I would think of right offhand.
Okay.
If you're willing to travel a little bit, then certainly you could go to like Kickapoo and certainly places like Forest Glen in the Danville area, also Allerton Park. So if you're willing to travel a little bit, that's always good. I'd also check with some of the Champaign County Forest Preserve District sites. They have some throughout the county, the Champaign County Forest Preserve District sites. So they have, there's kind of pockets, but if you're looking for something close, I'd go to Crystal Lake.
Okay. And is it still possible to get, I know we've talked in the past about these guides that are for walking tours through the Twin Cities that will show you, if you just want to see examples of different kinds of trees.
Absolutely. Actually, the City of Urbana and the City of Champaign both have tree walks, and you can get those guides at our office, or you can certainly check with the Public Works office in both of those cities, and I think also the libraries, I think, have them. There's the University Avenue Tree Walk that's in Champaign, and then also the State Street Tree Trail Guide that's in Urbana. So it's just, that's a nice diversity. They're not necessarily the biggest ones, but the nice thing is that they're on public thoroughfares, so that's easy to go, and they're marked, as in they're marked in the book, so you know the address and where to go. And so it's actually amazing as you start wandering around the cities or any area, just the diversity of trees that are out there. It's really, it's surprising sometimes when you really stop to look at them.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk with some other folks. Champaign, next, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
We really enjoy your show. Thank you very much for your efforts in helping us all to be better informed. I have a quick question about perennial pruning. We have an Annabelle hydrangea, about 6-inch spherical blossoms, very beautiful, and we left them on through the winter. So now, do we prune just under the blossom, or do we take as much stem as we can?
Down to the ground. Go for it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Annabelle's happen to be one of those that bloom on new wood. So there are one of the hydrangeas. So you can really do a hard prune if you want to, if you want it to be a bigger plant. But I think Annabelle's have a tendency to sort of flop open because the flowers are so big that I think a good heavy prune, and when I say down to the ground, you can leave 6 inches or so, and that's fine. But they'll look much better.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Thank you. I think we have somebody here, line number two in Lovington. I'm not so sure. Number here in Champaign, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk at illinois.edu. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a Holder Culture Educator with U of I Extension, and once a month she's on this program, and we talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. Now let's try Lovington, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
First thing, is it too early to uncover daylilies and iris?
I would definitely, normally I would say yes, it's too early. But things that, I started uncovering like my garlic and strawberries and things like that because they're growing. I mean, and they're just turning yellow under there. So I would go ahead and pull stuff away from them, but leave it close by in case we do, you know, when we start getting a forecast, a freeze is not an issue. You know, if it's around 32 or so, don't worry about it too much. It's really more when we start getting into the 20s, especially into like that 25, 26, if it were to get that cold at night, then I'd recover them. So it makes a little bit more effort for us, but I think it's better to get that stuff off of there. Otherwise, they'll start to rot, or they turn so yellow, it's hard for them to get going again.
Okay, how about transplanting clematis?
As in transplanting it, moving it around? I'm planting
it. I get it for the thing, I'd say.
Right. And that's fine. Usually we would say probably April is a good time. So I think I'd probably, if you're just going to go out and purchase some and then plant it, I think I'd probably wait until like the 1st of April. If you already have it or whatever, you certainly could go ahead and plant it. But I think I would probably wait just in case.
Mm-hmm. How about pruning roses?
Yeah, boy, you know, normally we'd be back to that April 1st date, but mine are already starting to bud out, and so I wouldn't do any probably heavy pruning on them right now, but if you want to go ahead and clean them up, which is kind of what I've been doing, anything that's obviously dead, anything that maybe looks diseased or whatever, I've kind of cleaned them up. But I hate to do a lot of heavy pruning on them for fear that it might stimulate some new growth, which is, we don't want any more of that than we already have, so I think I'd probably hold off if you can.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right. Very good. Over to another caller here. This is someone in Ashmore, and this is line four. Hello.
Good morning. Excuse me. Hi. I have a question regarding establishing some grass seeding. I'm looking at putting it in an area along a fence that's probably about, say, 5 to 10 feet wide and a couple hundred feet long, and it's something that I may not be mowing, want to mow every week, but it may be 5-6 times a year type of mowing situation. I want to kind of grass seed to use, and I want to establish that.
Mm-hmm. So are you? Do you feel like you really want to go with a grass necessarily, or you're just really trying to cover this area, and is that kind of the idea rather than...
Yes, there's a lot of deer population wants to go through there all the time, and they pretty much stomped it up, and it needs to be reseeded.
Okay. But you're really wanting a grass that's going to look different than typical grass? I was trying to figure out what your ultimate goal is.
I guess my motivation would be to establish some cover out there.
Yeah, so something or other.
Yes.
Okay. I think probably if you're looking for something that's maybe more lower maintenance in the sense of, I shouldn't say lower maintenance, it's lower input. If you want to go with something along the lines of, like, if you wanted to do a typical lawn grass, you could go with something like the turf-type tall fescues, which are, they look very lawn-esque, but yet they're, again, that kind of a smaller size. You certainly, you know, you might even think, I don't know if you've considered something like little bluestem. It gets, you know, it's a native grass. It gets a little taller than you might typically think of, but it certainly would be a grass you wouldn't have to mow or seldom mow. Maybe once a year you might mow it. And so you might even think about some of the native grasses. They're going to be a little bit taller. Little bluestem, although it's not that tall. Prairie drop seed might be another one. And you can certainly get seeds for these. So it's not that you have to start them as plants. So you might think about that if you don't mind having something that maybe looks a little bit different than a typical lawn, but at least, especially if you're not going to mow it very often, I think you might be better off actually going with something that isn't lawn-like, like the prairie drop seed or a little blue stem or something along those lines.
And when is a good time to think about trying to establish those grasses?
You could certainly do that now. Absolutely.
Is it something you need to? What's the seedbed preparation need to be?
Well, I think anytime you do any type of seeding, it's always best to have where the soil area has been roughened up to some extent, so that you can get a good seed to soil contact. Is there stuff there right now? Is there other just existing grass, or is there something else there? Or
kind of a mixture of grasses and some weeds.
grasses and weeds. Yeah, it may be one of those things where I don't know whether you have, you know, really undesirable weeds. Like, I don't know if you have any thistle. You know, it depends on what kind of weeds you have,
no,
I guess.
I would say, when I speak of weeds, more or less, there's a few broadleaves mixed in there. And mm-hmm. other areas are just bits bare. And kind of
right. So it may be one of those things that, you know, if you feel like, depending on what the weed, you may feel like you want to go ahead and control it before you do your seeding. It's always easier to do it before rather than after. And you could certainly use one of the non-selective herbicides, the glyphosate-type products that are sold as Roundup and a whole bunch of other things. And you could certainly go ahead and do that. You know, it's warm enough now that it actually would work as long as the weed is actively growing. And then you actually can seed right into that. If you have a halfway decent seed bed, you wouldn't have to go ahead and till it, or actually I probably wouldn't have to use a product like that.
All right.
And then you could go ahead and seed right into it, and that way you kind of take care of your weeds and then seed right into it.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you much.
Right, thank
sure.
you. Here, I have an email question, and this is something that actually we probably could talk at some length about. I'm not sure how thorough an answer that you can give, but it connects with what we were just talking about with the last caller, and we have someone here who says that they would like to replace all of their grass mm-hmm. with low care plantings, and they want to know where to start.
Yeah. You know, it really is one of those things, low care plantings. Everybody has a different feeling for whether. I assume this must be full sun if it's a lawn. I'm assuming.
I would get, well, he doesn't say, but
really
let's say yes.
Let's say yes.
Let's say yes.
I think it's one of those things you really have to kind of think through what that means by low care. You know, where do you start? Obviously, one of the things you want to do is kill the lawn off. You don't want to plant right into it, and you don't want to till existing lawn because then it's just going to root back in. So you don't want to do any of that. So you may want to actually, I think what I would probably do, one of the things that if they don't mind spending a little bit of time and effort and sort of wading through this a little bit is, and I think I know I've talked about this before, is the whole idea of lasagna gardening, and you can mm-hmm. Google this, and there's a book on it, and it's really just sheet composting is all it is, but it's a great way to kill off lawns without having to till or dig the sod or anything like that, and it makes a wonderful garden bed because you have all this compost and stuff. And so the whole idea is that you start off with like wet newspapers, just several layers of wet newspapers, and we all have those, and you just lay that out into the area wherever you're doing this, and then you just start layering it, and usually, you know, it's kind of whatever you have out there. It could be compost, you know, you do a few inches of compost, like 4 to 6 inches of compost, and then you might do some shredded leaves, and then you might do another layer of compost, and then if you have some soil, so it's the whole idea of you're just sort of like making lasagna. You just have these different layers to the point where you might have maybe 12 inches. It gets fairly tall. As that decomposes, then, of course, it gets smaller, but then you plant right into that, and that will kill the sod, and it makes a wonderful garden bed. Oh. So, and I've done that for any number of places where I've, and I think I know I mentioned this before, where I've had creeping Charlie, and I just wanted to kill it off and start all over again kind of thing, and I've done that method, and it did kill it. Now, it did creep out along the sides, you know, of wherever the bed was, so it didn't kill it all completely. But it was great for that, smothered it out, and I've done that actually with violets as well. I had violets that came into a strawberry bed, and I knew I wanted to redo the bed anyway, so I just layered it with all this stuff and killed off the violets and made a wonderful bed for the plants. So I think it's a great way to start out, and you could certainly do that. I usually would probably do that in the fall and then planted it in the spring, but you could do it now. I mean, it would be a great activity to do now, and then just plant right into it. And then as far as plants, it kind of, again, we're back to the whole idea of what you're looking for. But it would be something that if it's a shadier environment, I might think about some things like, you know, I really like, there's some barrenwort, I think is one of the things that it's called. And I know it's a horrible name, but epimedium. It's good for kind of drier, shadier spots if they have a little bit of shade. Even things like hosta is actually pretty low maintenance if you have a shadier environment. As far as sunnier places, they might think about, you know, as far as low maintenance, you know, daylilies, you can't hardly kill them, and they take off and do their thing. And there are some shorter ones. Happy Returns is kind of a nice one that has a yellow flower to it, and it does rebloom. So there's a few things along those lines, but you kind of have to decide, you know, really what are you wanting? Are you wanting it to flower? And there's other things along
okay,
those lines.
Okay, so basically, first of all, you've got to assess it particularly for how much sun it's going to get.
Absolutely.
And then start thinking about, well, what do you want? What right. kind of look do you want? Right. What kind of plants do you want?
Right.
Do you want it to be all just green? Do right. you want it to be flowering? Do you want it to be tall? Do you want to be short? Do you, you know, what,
absolutely.
What do you want?
And because you might even think, you know, maybe you do want to, maybe, you know, this is a lawn area, but it isn't anything where you're playing sports or anything on it. So maybe you want to go with something like the little blue stem or prairie drop seed, some of the native grasses that I mentioned before. Because once they get established, they're pretty low maintenance, you know, trim them once a year kind of thing. So you kind of have to decide from there. But I'm glad they said low maintenance instead of no maintenance, because we know that's not true.
Okay. We have callers. Sandy Mason is with us. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign, Ford, Iroquois, Vermilion counties, and she's here on the program once a month. On a Tuesday, we talk about lawn and garden care. So whatever questions you have about things that grow in the home landscape, houseplants, we can do that too. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Next, we have someone in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Hi. How
yeah.
are you all?
Good.
My question, I am looking to do some landscaping in my backyard this spring, and I have a pretty shady backyard. And one of the trees where I'm looking to plant around is a black walnut. And I wanted to know if you have any suggestions on what may work as far as the shrubs and maybe even some perennials within the 10 feet around the base of the walnut.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And you know this, but other people may not know this, is the fact that black walnuts and actually even butternuts will actually keep other plants from growing around them.
Right.
They actually have a natural herbicide that keeps other plants from growing. But
exactly.
not everything. So that's the good news. And
good.
I was trying to see if I actually have a list with me. But at Purdue, if you have internet access, and if you go, actually Purdue University has a really nice fact sheet on what to grow underneath black walnuts.
Okay.
And it'll have stuff like resistant, not resistant, you know, tolerant. Usually, I think they
right.
say tolerant is really what they say. Generally, anything, you know, I think there's some asters that probably do well, and they'll do okay in some shade. I'm trying to think
right.
in shadier environments like that. And I'm sorry, I'm not having much luck just off the top of my head.
But it's tough because I have the walnut, and then next to it's a giant sycamore, and there's a giant tulip poplar next to it. So it's
wow.
pretty shady in the back, and that is on the edge, so there's a little more sun maybe.
Right, right. Well, I guess the good news, if you go out into the woods, there are things growing underneath
right.
walnut trees, so things do indeed grow. I don't know if you're wanting something that's sort of, you know, throughout the season, might be a little different, but certainly the woodland wildflowers, I mean, they seem to do okay out in the woods, but
right.
but obviously most of those are in the springtime, and it looks like
right.
David just popped up that.
Well, I'm trying to find, well, I'm right now,
oh, okay.
I am
looking at
this is yeah, well, okay. Here for this is
it should have a list of sort of resistant.
An article about the toxicity of black walnut. And here it goes: plants observed
right.
to be tolerant, landscape plants. So we got arborvitae, clematis, crabapple, black locust. These are all trees. Flowers, herbaceous
mm-hmm.
plants. Astilbe, bee balm, begonia, bellflower.
There you go.
Shasta daisy, Dutchman's breeches, glory of the snow, hyacinth, mayapple, pansies, snowdrops.
A long list.
Yeah, so there's a list. So go to that.
Yeah. More investigation.
And it
yeah.
does look like, you know, a fair number of these are the things that I would think of as wildflowers.
Right, right. The woodland wildflowers.
And woodland wildflowers and things that, so you could probably put something together so that there would be some things that would be blooming early in the spring. I don't know whether there would be things that would, so if maybe you could get some flowering at different times of the year. So if you
right.
planned it right, you probably could
sure.
get, you probably could find a bunch of stuff that,
right.
that would grow just,
right. Right.
I can tell you one thing, I have one in my backyard and violets grow just fine.
I was going to say that, I knew that.
Violets grow just fine under black walnut.
But it's good
to
know.
I might be able to find some of those.
Yeah, there you I'm sure David would be glad to give you some
exactly.
violets. But I think, especially like bee balm, I didn't realize that, so bee balm would be a good one. In little sunnier spots, astilbe, and then certainly the woodland wildflowers. So there are certainly some things that you could put in out there.
All right. Well, we will
good luck.
See what we can do.
All right. Thank you for the call. We will continue and talk next with somebody in Belgium. Line two. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you all.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a question, but I'm afraid I got to throw a wet blanket on your situation with the walnuts. Walnuts are being attacked by a disease called thousand canker. The disease started in Mexico, I think, spread up along the West Coast. It's killing walnuts at a phenomenal rate. It has been reported in Tennessee and Pennsylvania. Please do not transfer any undried lumber, kiln-dried lumber, any place, firewood, anything, from one place to another, because it's spreading horrible diseases through our natural trees. And the walnut and the butternut are both being attacked very, very strongly right now, and it's going to going to cause a lot of grief in people's yards, including Mr. Inge's.
Believe me, and this is a big tree. I hope never to have to pay to have it cut down, because I'm not sure that I'll be able to afford it.
I hope it doesn't get
through. Yeah, me too. Believe me. Yes.
But the question I was going to have, and this is going to take just a moment to set up. Last year I went to a farmer's market. Actually, it was in Kane County Farmer Market up Chicago area. And some people were selling interesting little things. It was a bag, and inside the bag was an ear of corn. And they put the bag and the ear of corn into the microwave, and bingo, you had a little bag of popcorn. Nice little idea. I didn't much care for the bag and the bag idea, but the popcorn they had was just the most fabulous white popcorn I've ever eaten. And I saved one of the ears without popping it. And I'm wondering, is that corn like the yellow dent corn that we have growing here that grows from a hybrid and you can't plant the seeds? Or can you plant popcorn seeds and get the same popcorn back?
Well, you can certainly try it. I mean, there's certainly hybrids within popcorn as well as there are within field corn, sweet corn, and all the others. You can certainly try it, but and just see what happens.
Hope for the best,
but it's really, yeah.
Yeah. That's about all that can be said, huh?
Yeah, you just really don't know at this point, not really knowing what that was. But
yeah.
You might have a little better chance than if you were doing like field corn or sweet corn. You might have a little better chance of getting the same thing.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah,
all
good
right,
luck.
Thank you. Well, we're talking this morning about things that grow in the home landscape. We do it every month with Sandy. We'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
WILL programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, offering over 30 varieties and blends of whole bean or ground coffee at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Coffee, tea, and chai are available from their retail store, in local restaurants, and through Columbia Street Roastery's coffee service. More information is available at 352-9713.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon, and we have 10 different topics every week. In the second hour today, we will talk about women in science and what can be done to encourage more girls and young women to study and prepare for careers in engineering, in math, and in science. Lisa Klein will be our guest. She is a professor of materials science and engineering at the School of Engineering at Rutgers University, and among other things, was the very first female faculty member in the Rutgers School of Engineering. This was in the mid-1970s. She's here visiting the campus and will be talking with us. Tomorrow morning, Susan Kundrat will be here. She is a registered dietitian and is on the program once a month. This is always on a Wednesday to talk about diet and nutrition. Celeste Quinn will be the host. Then we'll have a couple of more candidate conversations. In fact, the last two that we'll be doing before the primary next week. Tomorrow at 11 o'clock, the guest is Matt Getten. He's a Democratic candidate for Congress in the 13th Congressional District, one of two Democrats. And also on the program Thursday at 10, we will talk with Chapin Rose. He is currently a representative, Illinois State Representative, and he's a candidate for the State Senate in a new district, the 51st. Also want to mention that the two Democratic candidates in the 13th Congressional District will be taking part in a live debate that will be broadcast from our studios, WILL-TV. This will be tomorrow night, Wednesday, the 14th, and it will take place at 7 p.m. You can watch it on WILL-TV. We'll also have it for you on WILL-AM and online. You can follow us on Twitter, Well Public Media. This morning, our guest is Sandy Mason. She's an extension educator with Extension and works in Champaign, Ford, Iroquois, Vermilion counties. Always once a month, always on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, so questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Effingham is our next caller, line four. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Hey, I've got a question. I've got quite a few rose bushes, and I've noticed already they are just full of aphids. And what can a person do about it, if they need to worry about it, or what proper thing to do?
So outside?
Yeah.
Aphids on them already. Huh.
Already.
Wow. Well, I would imagine, to be honest with you, I would imagine it's probably going to get cold enough late enough, I mean, later on enough, that maybe that'd be one good thing about it getting cold. I think at this point, I'd probably just take, if you happen to have your garden hose out already, I think I would just probably just wash them off with a garden hose as best you can and then not really worry about it at that point and just kind of wait and see later on because it's early enough now.
Yeah, I was just amazed to see.
Yeah, I'm surprised too. Although I've seen all kinds of little gnats and stuff out and about right now. So,
All right.
Thank you.
Sure.
And again, questions are welcome. 333-9455 WILL. That's what the letters and the numbers line up for. So it's 333-WILL. Toll free 800-222-WILL. Well, we have a lull here in calls. There's something that we thought it might be interesting to talk about here. People, if they've been following the news here in Champaign and Urbana, probably have heard that it looks like the city governments in the two cities are moving towards charging people a stormwater fee. Now, I don't want to get into whether this is good or not, but basically the idea is that, you know, the rain comes down, it hits our properties, it runs off, and it has to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. So we have this infrastructure to take that away. The idea here, as I understand it, is that what they're really encouraging people to try to do is do things around their home landscape to capture that so that it doesn't end up having to run off so that they have to do something with it. Now, and one way to look at it is to say, well, that's free water. So if you can use that, either make sure it gets soaked up or store it. Well, that's just, you know, when the time comes when you would have to water your plants, you've got that as a resource that you can use. And there are places that people can go to get advice on what they can do in their home landscape in terms of both how it's designed and also what kind of plants that they have there so that it will capture water and use all that free stuff that falls out of the sky.
Yeah, it is one of those things because obviously as we build buildings, as we build parking lots and streets and sidewalks and all that's impervious, you know, the rain hits it and then just rolls off where normally it would just infiltrate, which is what we want it to do. So we've changed things, you know, by the fact that we have these urban environments. And so I think it's sort of trying to get back to what it normally would have done was that it would infiltrate right where it falls, right at your house, and it would infiltrate right there. So that's, we like that part. So I think that's where the whole idea of rain gardens, and people may have heard about these, and actually they're one of those things that's really not all that, it takes a little bit of thought. And I was just saying there's actually an excellent brochure, manual, whatever you want to say, called Rain Gardens, a how-to manual for homeowners. It actually comes out of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and you actually can go to the Wisconsin DNR and you can go ahead and download it. It's a free PDF, or you can send away and actually get the hard copy if you prefer that. And I like it in the sense that it really takes you through the whole process, how to sort of think through a rain garden, where am I going to put it, how big does it need to be, what plants I might plant, kind of the overall preparation. And I think that's a great thing. So if people want to check that out and get more info to see if this is something that's going to be good for them, because it looks like there might actually be some financial incentives, depending on what the cities decide to do. And plus, it's just a good thing to do anyway. So I think that's one way to sort of keep the water where it falls kind of thing. Also, the whole idea of rain barrels, of course, is one thing that's great. And I've been using rain barrels for years, and I love them. It's I'm amazed that with just a very slight rain and how fast they fill up. I love using them for my containers, because I have lots of containers, so it's good for that. They actually have, the mechanics have come around now to the point where you actually can get pumps if you want to just pump it out of the rain barrel, and actually that way you have a little bit more water pressure. So there's lots of things that I think have sort of come around with these, kind of the whole idea of rain gardens and rain barrels, and also just rain harvesters or water harvesters. When I was a kid, you know, living on the farm and stuff, we called them cisterns, but now it's a little bit, you know, obviously it's changed a little bit, and they're nicer. Actually, I was over at the Danville Area Community College, and they had one put in next to their greenhouse, a harvester, where it actually is an underground system that collects, I don't know, 1,000 gallons of water. I mean, a lot of water, and then they can use it within their greenhouses. And it looks great. I mean, it's one of those things that just has a bubbler on top, and beyond that, you can't really even tell. So I think there's a lot of things out there now that are upgraded and different, and ways that we can use our water. Yeah. And And help out the environment at the same time. Because every time all that rain falls, everything it hits, you know, it flushes all those pollutants, anything, into our local streams. And a lot of times it goes directly into the stream without any processing. So it's just real important for the health of our local streams, too.
Yeah. Well, I think it's true that more and more people seem to get interested, at least or they're interested in the idea of rain barrels and the fact that when all that rain falls, why not catch it and use it? I think the thing that people don't maybe realize is when we get and we can get these very heavy downpours mm-hmm. where you get a lot of rain in a short period of time. Rain barrel can fill up pretty quick.
Absolutely.
And once it's full, you're not going to move it.
Yeah. No.
It's way too heavy. Make sure wherever it is, that's where you want it to be because when it's full of water, you're not going to move it.
Right. And you have to allow for an overflow. I mean, you don't want it just to overflow the top. I mean, and if you purchase one, typically they have an overflow already set up to the point where there's a hose attached and then it'll go out that way. Or you can combine rain barrels. You can put, attach them together. So when one fills, the next one will fill. So there's lots of things to do, but you have to think about that whole process of there are times when they'll fill to the point where you're going to have to allow for overflow, and you don't want that to overflow right next to your house.
Yes, though. Yes, because then the water is just going to go into your basement, which you
not
really
a
don't
good
want.
Idea.
All right, very good. Okay, well, questions on that? We could talk about that some more or anything else that has to do with the home landscape. Give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And let us go back to the phones here and start with Champagne, I think. Line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Let's see. I own two ornamental orange trees that I've had for about 25 years. They're just in big pots and put them out in the summer and in the winter. They've survived a number of things by now quite well. They currently, it seems like they have scale. There's these little things that attach to the stems and the tiny branches, and you can rub them off. And I guess my question is this a dangerous thing? I noticed, by the way, the leaves get a kind of sticky substance on it, which must be related to something that the scale does. And I guess, is it dangerous, and what's kind of the best way to control for it? Can you do something that isn't chemical or chemically based, or is there some chemically based thing that just works real well? We do not consume the oranges, by the way.
Okay. But congrats for having orange trees that long. I'm really impressed. You've brought them in and out all those years. It sounds like you're absolutely right. It sounds like scale, because scale is something you can rub off, and they'll be on the stems. They look like little helmets. They're really, it's hard to detect them sometimes. But they get on the underside of the leaves, and they do suck out the plant juices. So they can really stress to the plant, so it can start to kill off the branches. So it is an issue. And you definitely want to control it, and it'll only get worse. So a couple of things you can do, probably this time of year, once you put them outside, there's actually a lot of things like even ladybugs and stuff that will go ahead and eat them. So that's the good news. You'll get a little natural control once you put them outside. But at this point, actually something like insecticidal soap, I don't know if you have that particular product, but it's just a specially formulated soap to be used on plants. And actually that's really pretty effective. The only thing with scale is it's a little harder to control. So you're going to have to spray it. Usually just read the label, but usually it's like every week to 10 days. And usually you have to do it, unfortunately, like 6 to 8 times. I mean, you really have to do it on a regular basis for several weeks. One spray is not going to do it. So it can be done. Hopefully you have it in some spot, place where you can go ahead and spray them. That's really your best bet. And then hope you can get it outside soon and let the beneficials take care of it.
Okay. That sounds good. I appreciate it.
Okay, good.
All right. Thank you. Another Champagne caller. And this is line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah. I was wanting to know, I have a riding lawnmower, and we bought a dethatcher last year to attach to the back, but we've never used it yet. And I know where I come from in another country, we would do it in the spring. But down here, most people seem to dethatch in the fall. Can we do it in the spring here and not hurt the grass?
So what does it do when you say it's a dethatcher? Does it have like tines on it?
Yes.
Okay, so it goes along and it's kind of just kind of rips off the top surface.
Yeah.
And so that actually is fine. And you just want to do it when the lawn is actively growing. So you can do it in spring or fall for our lawn. So you certainly could do it in the spring. I mean, it might be a little bit early right now. I think I might wait maybe into April. And I don't know, do you have a thatch problem, or you're just a little bit concerned about it, or?
We have a thatch problem.
Okay. Because the one thing I will tell you is, if you really have thick thatch, as in more than half an inch is fine. When we start getting more than half an inch, then we usually can have an issue. But the good grass will actually root right into the thatch. And so if you do a lot of this dethatching where it's sort of ripping it out, you can rip out good grass along with it.
Okay.
So I'm just sort of letting you know.
So would it be a better idea then to just go ahead and have it aerated and seed so that it would then go in there?
Yeah. That's why usually we go with core aeration, because it's that thing that comes along and takes out the plugs of soil. And it's not nearly as disruptive. I think those dethatchers are fine. If you have a little bit of a thatch problem, you're not all that concerned that the grass is into that. So I think what I would do is probably get out a pocket knife, whatever, cut out a little plug of sod, pull it out, and see how thick the thatch is. And that shouldn't be more than a half inch. If it's around a half inch or so, then I think your method is fine. If you start getting into 3/4 inch, then I would be really concerned that your good grass is actually rooted into the thatch. And if you use that tine method, you're going to rip it out.
Great.
So,
thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. And I think we had an earlier caller who was this man who wanted to plant the grass along his fence row in Ashmore. I think he wanted to follow up and ask some more questions. So this is line 4. Go ahead.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call again.
Sure.
I had a question I failed to ask. What would the seeding rate be for those three grasses you mentioned?
Oh, well, it really depends on the grass, to tell you the truth. So I'm sorry I can't really help you with that. It depends on the grass.
Like to choose tall fescue, what would you go with there?
I think, off the top of my head, I hate to say that, to be honest with you. If you go to the U of I Extension website, we actually have Lawn Talk is the name of it, and it lists it, because it depends on whether if you're using the tall fescue. I just can't remember it. I hate to say it off the top of my head, because I think I know, but I could very well be wrong. So I would just check with that. It tends to be a lower rate than what you'll see with something like Kentucky bluegrass. So sorry. Can't help you.
I'll go to your website and take care of it.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks. All right. Back to, let's see, next, I think somebody in Urbana, line number 3. Hello.
Hello, Sandy.
Uh-huh.
I'm a plant pusher.
Uh-oh.
And there's a variety of plants, the helleborates,
mm-hmm.
which I think are neglected.
Mm-hmm.
I've got two of them that are in bloom now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just beautiful plants. One's a rosy red, the other's a yellow with purple speckles. The foliage is really quite beautiful. The new foliage comes out with a nice light green color. It gets a little darker. And it's deer resistant,
mm-hmm.
almost deer proof. I think they've gotten a bad reputation as being difficult to grow.
Well,
I don't think they are.
Yeah, I think it's the name. Hellebore is just not a good, and I'm sorry, it's sort of like barren wort. It's not a name that people say, gee, I think I want to plant that. So I think Lenten Rose or some of the other names that they have for them are much better names. And so I think maybe as a plant pusher, you might decide to market a different name and just tell people that, you know, use one of these other names like Lenten Rose or one of those. And I think, because you're absolutely right, they bloom at this wonderful time when we typically don't have a whole lot of things blooming. The leaves are gorgeous, and they bloom for a long time. So you really get a lot of bang for your buck.
The bracts are quite nearly as beautiful as the flower.
Right.
And they hang on for 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, they're beautiful. You're absolutely right. But they are for shadier environments. And, you know, if you get them in the right place, I've just seen some gorgeous stands of them. So you're right. We'll work on it.
Mine have morning sun and afternoon shade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably then, really good spot. A lot of organic matter in your soil for the most part?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
When they built this house 50 years ago, 60 years ago, they were very careful to put the soil back.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So it's close to what it was as a prairie.
Yeah, so that little bit, so if people have those little shadier environments, some organic matter in the soil, yeah, they're great plants. Yep, good point. We'll work on it. We'll both work on it, get more people to plant them.
So.
Great.
All right, thank you for the call. Let us continue. And next, we will talk with somebody else in Urbana, line number 1. Hello.
Hi. I'm kind of a naive Gartner. And this is my question. I have collected some seeds from red peppers and yellow peppers, and I have this idea that I will plant them, and I wondered what I need to do with the seeds to prepare them for growing happy.
Okay. And these were just the vegetables. You had the vegetables and you cleaned them and then you kept the seeds?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So I will tell you, I don't know where depending on where they came from, they may not be exactly the same as what you, and so hopefully you kind of realize that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're fine with that because it may not be the same, there'll be peppers.
But from Costa Rica or somewhere,
Yeah. Well, plus just the fact that depending on if they're hybrids and cross-pollination and all that good stuff, things do change.
Oh, I see.
So you see what I mean? So you can't necessarily assume that it's going to be the same plant. But there'll certainly be peppers, and you'll probably still like them. I mean, it just won't be exactly the same. At any rate, so what do you need to do? So you have them just do you want to start them indoors, I assume? Because that's typically what people would probably do is start them indoors ahead of time.
Right.
So usually we're probably maybe a little bit early because you don't want to start them so early that you're having to worry about, what to do with them. So usually I say the end of March, 1st of April is a good time to actually start things like peppers and tomato seeds and stuff. And then by the time that they get up and growing, then you can put them out. Usually mid-May is a good time to put those out because they're warm lovers. They hate cold temperatures. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure you do that. Probably the big thing about starting plants indoors is the fact that you need light. You can't really do it on the windowsill. Unless you happen to have a greenhouse or something where there's plenty of supplemental light, it's really tough to do them without extra light. But the good news is you can buy those shop lights, which are really inexpensive. It usually have a couple of fluorescent tubes in them.
Yeah.
Fairly inexpensive. Just put those over a table or someplace where it's going to be fairly warm, usually if you have it in this low 70s is good. So if you have a basement or a bedroom, whatever. And then then you can start them under lights like that. And usually the lights you want within 6 to 8 inches, you want them fairly close to the plants. And so after that, it's really, nice soilless mix or seed germination mix. You can use any kind of containers as long as they're clean, yogurt containers, whatever you've got. As long as they're clean, make sure they have good holes in the bottom. It's pretty, once you get the kind of the setup, it's good. There's a lot of great info out there on how to start seeds. So there's just a few things about keeping the seeds moist and all that good stuff. So I would go for it.
Okay. Did you say I should be keeping the seeds moist now?
Well, once you plant them.
Oh.
So sure. Once you plant them, then you just need to make sure that you keep the seeds moist.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I told you I was
okay. Have fun. Have fun. That's how we all start.
I'll bring you one if they come out.
Hey, good for you.
Right,
okay.
Bye.
Thanks for the call. We have a couple minutes left here. People have additional questions. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455 and email will-talk@illinois.edu. You said you have a program.
Tonight, Teresa Mears, who's an instructor out at Parkland, is doing a program for Master Gardeners and actually for the general public as well. And it starts at 7 o'clock, and it's on the lowdown on sustainable lawn care. So it's just she's going to talk about the whole idea of how can you have a halfway decent lawn, but not necessarily put a lot of fertilizer and all these other things that people tend to do. So that'll be good. It's at 7 o'clock. It's at the Tony Knoll area there in Parkland. So it's right next to the greenhouses. Mm-hmm. So just find the greenhouses on the west side of Parkland. So it's in a separate building, but real easy to find. And it's at 7 o'clock tonight, free. Anybody's welcome to come. And I think it'd be a good program and just start some good discussion about lawn care and things that can make it more sustainable.
Okay. And probably good to be thinking about that now because we're really kind of in advance. If you are going to do things like you're going to do fertilizing and weed control, it's probably too soon to do that now, maybe within about another month so.
Right.
So if you're thinking about that, you'll want to plan ahead and do some research and figure out what you want to do. Now's the time to be thinking about that.
Absolutely. So tonight, 7 o'clock at the Tony Knoll at Parkland.
Okay. Another caller, Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. I've got an old black walnut tree with one of the trunks was sawed off years ago, and the stump is starting to rot now. And I'm wondering, is there anything I can do to fill it so it doesn't get hollowed?
So it's the rest of the tree still alive.
The rest of the tree's still alive. Yeah, it's a good 50, 60 years old.
Yeah, we really don't recommend, you know, sometimes you'll see pictures of people with concrete and all these other things. We really don't recommend that you fill it with anything. Just
let it hollow,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, yeah. As long as there's no, I assume there's no stub or anything like that. It had a halfway decent cut. And...
Well, it's a stub, yeah. It's almost horizontal because the branch, the trunk, it was one of the main trunks that went off to the side. So it was cut down. And so rain gets into that. And there's a big hole in there now. And, you know, the wood is crumbly.
Right. Well, there really isn't anything you do as far as filling it. Uh-huh. Now, you know, you might want to get a professional arborist out there to take a look at it to see if they can clean it up to the point where, you know, it sounds like this happened a long time ago.
Yeah,
so I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, the rain's going to collect in there anyway.
Yeah. So there really, you know, there really isn't anything. Because anytime you try to fill it, the rain is just going to go around whatever you filled it. So you really haven't helped anything by trying to fill it. Yeah. So that's not really an issue. But there might be some, you know, you might have professional arborists take a look at it to see if there's something else that they can do, but I have a feeling it's just one of those things
just
you can.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Sure.
Thank you. I don't suppose in a case like that it might be worth trying to see if somebody can actually cut it more so it would be more flush.
Right.
To
that's
the
what I
tree.
Wonder. Yeah. There might be, and that's why I think it may be getting a professional arborist out there to take a look at it just to make sure that it's a good cut so that if the tree can, it sounds like it's probably not going to happen where it could actually close that area, but so at least the tree can try to. You know, halfway take care of it without. But if there's a stub, it's going to be really hard for the tree to sort of heal over that area.
That's kind of like also one of the things that people from time to time they still ask questions about. Well, if I'm doing major pruning or trimming, if I cut off a big limb, am I supposed to do something to that cut surface? And I guess there have been times when people have thought, well, yeah, you paint various kinds of things or do something. And I think now the advice is no. If you make a good clean flush cut as good as you can, leave it alone.
Right. I mean, you just really want to, and you really want to check the you know, find a book or a website or whatever that sort of shows you, because it's really not so much a flush cut as it is, there's actually a branch, what's called the branch bark ridge, and there's a ridge like underneath on the bottom side of a branch as you look at it, and you actually want to maintain that. So it ends up like it's a little bit of an angle to it. So you need to look at a picture and just realize that good cuts, none of this sort of stubs, the stubs are just going to die. I was out at a restaurant not too terribly long ago, and in the parking lot they left all these stubs on these trees, and I just wanted to go inside and complain. I did.
I'm a horticulturalist, and let me tell you, I can't believe
it doesn't take that much more. I guess my point is it doesn't take that much more effort to take it off clear to the trunk rather than leaving these stubs. So just go ahead and just do that and clean it up, make it look nice.
Sandy Mason, she's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension Champaign-Fort Iroquois Vermilion County. She's here once a month. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.